So there is this quirky little story in Scripture right near the beginning of the Hebrew Bible or Old Testament, found in Genesis. We usually call it the story of Noah's Ark. Anybody know it? A few people know it. I'm not going to tell the story of Noah's Ark. What I'm going to read is the passages at the beginning of this story and at the end of the story after the flood has taken place. So this is sort of what starts the whole flood thing going. The Lord saw that the wickedness of humans was great in the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of their hearts was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made humans on earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out from the earth the humans I have created, people together with animals and creeping things and birds of the air, for I'm sorry that I have made them. Then it goes on to tell the story of the flood and the animals coming on the ark and them floating around for 6 months until the water receded, and then they disembark. And it says, then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelled the pleasing odor, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of humans, for the inclination of the human heart is evil from youth, nor will I ever again destroy every living creature as I have done. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. This is a story from our Holy Scriptures. So if you ever went to Sunday school or read the Bible in any way, one of the most popular, of course, and familiar stories in Scripture is the story of Noah's Ark. People who don't know anything about the Bible have probably been told the story of Noah's Ark. Mostly it's used to explain rainbows, right? It's a popular one because of this image of a big boat, an ark, and the animals coming on the ark two by two, and then Noah and his family getting on the ark, and then this big flood taking place. They float on the water for months and months until the water recedes and the ark lands on the ground, and the humans and the animals can disembark off this boat and presumably repopulate and live the life God intended for them. We used to have a big ark upstairs for the kids. It got repurposed for flower pots at the front, but we used to have this big ark and this big picture of Noah's ark and animals and that kind of thing upstairs. Nurseries in churches and in homes have been designed around the theme of Noah's ark, resplendent with these cartoon animal characters and stuffies, and then finished off with a big rainbow, right? Lots of nurseries were turned into something to do with Noah's ark. What we have forgotten about the story of Noah and the flood is that it is a grim story of God destroying all people and all animals on earth. Humans, animals, plants, because God was grieved by everything that he had created. The story says that God was sorry that he had made humans on the earth, and it grieved him in his heart. So he decided to wipe them off the face of the earth, all except for a few of them, Noah and his family, and two of each animal, or seven pairs of clean animals. And that's what God did, wiped them all off, according to the flood story. After the flood, God determined that even though the human heart is toward evil, God will never do that again. Life will continue. And the sign of God's promise is the rainbow. Animals and rainbows, so cute. Wiping off pretty much everything on earth because God wasn't pleased what he had created, kind of gruesome. Not the kind of story I might use in a nursery. Now, I know that this is a story, that it was likely written to explain why there was probably a destructive flood in a part of the world at one time. There are lots and lots of flood stories in ancient narratives, ancient literature. And in the early days of religion, people believed that humans, when they misbehaved, were punished by God. And when they were good, they were rewarded by God. And when they prayed or made some kind of sacrifice to God, God answered them like some sort of magic gumball. And some traditions still have these beliefs today. Many no longer have these beliefs. I don't. But I wonder, is there any way that we still grieve God? That God is grieved by our actions, and that there will be a consequence for grieving God. And I do still think that there is some way to rehabilitate this story of Noah's Ark. What if we saw God as the energy or spirit behind every living thing? That it's God who animates all of life. And that when we are destructive and do not honor or take care of life, we grieve God, this giver of life. That when we destroy life unnecessarily, without thought of what it will do to the balance of life, then earth, life, God grieves. Another way of thinking maybe about this kind of grief is that God is in pain and seeks to rebalance life. That grief is the impetus behind trying to restore health to the world. So as we continue with our series on tending to creation, which I'm going to wrap up next week with a discussion about hope, today I want to look at grief as a response to what is happening in creation. God's grief and our grief in response to God's grieving. A couple of months ago, I found myself in a river valley, standing along this river on the rocky shore, surrounded by a forest of trees. And it was just spectacular listening to this river and standing there. And I was all by myself, not a soul around me. And as I stood there, I found myself wanting to sing. And so I sang to God's creation. And before I even knew what was happening, my song turned to sobs. I stood there that day and I sobbed. I wept. I cried for the gift of this beautiful earth. I sobbed out my gratitude and joy. And I wept for the destruction that we are causing this magnificent body that we live on. And I wondered, is God grieved at what we do to each other and to the earth? Emily Wright, who I spoke of a couple of weeks ago, suggests that grief is a necessary part of climate repair. We must acknowledge the losses that we are experiencing these days and grieve them in order to know that we need to do better. One of the things that I realized I grieved just this last week as I was thinking about this theme, is the loss of innocence. How many of us as children, with our siblings or our cousins or neighbors, could go out for a couple hours and play in our neighborhoods or in the woods or someplace, and our parents not really worry about where we were? Could anybody do that? Yeah. My cousins would come down, and we would disappear for hours at a time and come back for meals. Now, I know that my grandparents and my dad probably knew where we, general vicinity of where we are, but we were out in the fields building forts or digging through the dirt or catching tadpoles or, you know, something like that. We were allowed to go out and enjoy nature. No cell phones, No social media, no screens to sit in front of, no distracting technology or even sophisticated toys. We spent a lot of time just playing in nature. We were connected to the land. Not so much anymore. As more and more people are moving to urban centers, we have fewer opportunities to connect with nature, with the land, to know where our food and water come from, how our air is purified by our forests, or the extent of how many natural resources are being destroyed out of greed. I grieve that young people do not have what we had. Of course, they have things we didn't. They have technology, they have mobility, they have more freedom of expression and access to information. Yet the reality is young people and people in general are becoming more anxious. In January of this year, at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia, Jason Brown was hired as the school's first ecological chaplain. A unique role that addresses climate grief with interreligious chaplaincy. He was noticing that students were feeling anxious and uncertain about their future, so he made a proposal to the university to create this position, and they hired him because students had been expressing a need for this kind of support in their lives. I grieve what our young people are missing. I also grieve the innocent dreams of the future we had in decades past. We dreamed of unlimited possibilities and potential, of brighter futures for the world. We didn't have that immediately fingertip knowledge of everything going on in the world. We weren't as jaded by the news as we are today. We didn't have the degree of misinformation, corrupt political systems, the extreme disparity between the rich and the poor that we have today. We believed that the future was always going to get better. This is no longer the case. Many people do not believe that our future will get better. Every day, we see that fewer younger couples around the world are choosing to have children, either because of the extreme cost or the fear of climate collapse. They've studied it. We're reading about government ineptitude at best and extreme corruption and violence at its worst. I grieve the loss of habitat for wild creatures and the shrinking of our rainforests and clean waters. If God is life, if God is the source of life, then God must grieve this loss as well. Grief is not easy. It is one of the most painful things we do as humans because it is so hard to lose what we love. As I stood by that river a couple months ago, I was aware of the loss that we are experiencing these days, loss of innocence and dreams, loss of habitat and love for creation, loss of connection with the earth and with each other. I read an article last week that said, the village it takes to raise a child, it's not there anymore. Loss of compassion for all people and living things, loss of civility and respect. And I grieved, and I wept for a long time that day. But I also saw beauty, and I see so much love in this world. How can God not grieve the losses we are experiencing? How can we not grieve? Yet grief, properly directed, can bring healing and hope. It reminds us that life is precious and that we can do things to restore balance in our lives and the world. Grief is not an easy process, but it's necessary to help us to grow in greater compassion and resilience. So we need to feel God's grief and then find ways to heal and restore our relationship with God, our source and our strength, and our relationships with each other and the earth. That, I believe, is our most important sacred work that we're doing today. Let's take a moment for reflection. If you, and this, you might want to consider this. If you were standing on the shore of that river and you felt that grief, what would you be grieving today?